All right, I feel like God's given me something to share here, so I'm just going to ask you guys, could you guys not move around? Like the next 30, 40 minutes, if you guys could just stay put, stay in your seats, and as best as possible, just give me your very best attention. I promise if you listen as good as you can, I will preach as good as I can, and we'll leave the rest up to the Lord. So can we do that? Awesome. I just want to share something with you guys really quick, because this afternoon, my wife came to Future Quest. She was in the Any Girl, Every Girl, and she was doing like a cupcake decorating workshop, so my daughters came with her. I have five kids. I have three boys and two girls, and my daughters are 7 and 4, and so my daughters, I went and grabbed something to eat, and I missed them because they were in my office, and I came back, and they left me this note right here. You want to put that up there? It was just so cute. It says, "Love, Claire and Junie," and then there's a picture of the three of us. Claire, it's me in the middle with the beard, Junie. And I just thought, man, girls really are sugar and spice and everything nice. You know, because if my sons were in there, like, I would have come back. They would have had a note, but the note would have said, like, "Dad, we're sorry. We broke everything in your office. Mom's making us write this note," you know, because they don't care. But girls, man, girls are the best. So big ups to the girls here, ladies. You know, as we've been praying for Future Quest, I told you guys at the very outset that this theme is not a new theme. This theme is actually the exact theme we had last year for Future Quest 2020 that we had to cancel, and we just carried it over. And so we've actually been praying about this theme for like going on 2 years now, which is vision. And really, like, a lot of what I'm going to say actually goes off of what Tripp and Carl and even John and I work together on our messages. And so a lot of what we're saying is the same thing. And what that tells me is that God really has something for you about this. And so there's people here, more than one, that God is speaking to you on this subject, and you need to take it to heart. You need to listen carefully. So turn up those volumes, and like I said, give me your best, okay? I want to show you guys a picture. I think most of you guys in this room will have seen this picture, because this picture went viral over the last few years. It still pops up every once in a while. It is a very, very controversial picture, okay? In fact, if you just Google the dress, this picture is what comes up, okay? So go ahead and put this picture up, okay? Now, how many of you guys have never seen this picture before? Anybody? Wow, okay. There's this thing called the internet, and if you go on it, it has all kinds of, I don't know, words and text and pictures. Okay, listen. Shh. Now, if you've never seen this picture before, you don't know what's going on right now. You're like, "What's so controversial? I don't understand. What's the big deal?" It's a picture of a dress, okay? Now, here's where it gets controversial. You only have two options. Don't try to tell me some other kind of option than one of these two. How many of you guys see white and gold? Raise your hand. How many of you guys see blue and black? Raise your hand. Okay. Stand up if you see white and gold. If you see white and gold, stand up. Wow. The white and gold is strong in this place. All right. Sit down. How many of you see blue and black, or some variation of blue and black? All right. Now, everyone sees white and gold. Fight the people who see blue and black. See blue and black. You fight the people who see white and gold. All right. All right. Shh. I'll tell you what I see. I very emphatically see blue and black. Okay? And for my blue and black brigade, I want to just tell you guys, the actual picture, the actual dress is blue and black. Yes. The actual picture, the actual dress in real life is blue and black. Now, I want to tell you guys something crazy. This picture came up, it's from Scotland. In like 2015, a girl was getting married. Her mom sent her a picture of a dress and she showed it around to her bridesmaids. And that's when the controversy started. And then it just like went viral from there. And I want to tell you something fascinating about this is scientists don't know why some people see white and gold and some people see blue and black. There's no consensus about exactly why. There's some theories. And I want to tell you about the best theory, seems like the most plausible theory, is there's actually a correlation between your sleeping habits and what color you see in the dress. Now, here's why. What they found is that people who go to bed early and wake up early tend to see blue and black. So we all know causation is not correlation. I'm not saying this is for sure it, but they said they also found that the opposite is true, that most people who stay up late and wake up late tend to see white and gold. And their thinking is, again, it's not white and gold. So you people that are like so proud of yourselves, it's not white and gold, okay? So listen, what they believe, or what some scientists have hypothesized, is that if you stay up late, your brain is used to seeing shadows more often, right? Because you're at night, it's not natural light, things have more shadows during the twilight hours and in the evening, and at nighttime. And so your brain has adapted to certain ways of seeing things, certain ways of inputting things that it sees, it imputes shadows in certain places where they're not shadows, and your brain then makes a calculation and does it. Now, what's also crazy is they have not been able to reproduce this in a lab in anything. They can't find anything else that they can make that comes close to approximating the kind of near 50-50 split in who sees white and gold and who sees blue and black. Okay. Now, I want to use that to jump into what I want to talk about. And again, I see a lot of people moving around. What I'm going to ask you is please stop moving around. Okay? Don't get up. If you have to make pee-pee, just keep it to yourself. Okay? If you have to make, I heard a poo-poo out there. Okay. People are weird. I'll leave it at that. People are weird. Now, what's crazy is that usually in life, we just think the way that we see something is the way that it is. In fact, the people who had never seen that dress before, they saw the picture and they thought, what? Like, they just saw it, either blue and black or white and gold, but they didn't know that other people saw it different than them. They didn't know that there was any controversy. You just see it and it's not until somebody else tells you they see something different that you even know that what you see is not right. And look, about this, like I said, it's very controversial. So people feel very strong about this picture for some reason. I don't know why, because it could not matter less. It is thoroughly inconsequential to you what color the actual dress is. It doesn't matter, okay? But there are things in life that do matter how you see it. And there's certain people, you see things a certain way, but I want to tell you, you're wrong. The way you see it is wrong. It's like when you see that dress and you see white and gold. It's wrong. There's two identical twins. They grew up in a really dysfunctional home. Their mom left them when they were little kids, and so they just grew up with their dad. Their dad was a terrible alcoholic, and it was a very abusive, very painful, very unstable home that they grew up in. And when the boys grew up, one of the sons ended up living a life that very similarly resembled their dad's. He himself also became an alcoholic. He had a hard time keeping a job, hard time making friends. His life was very unstable and dysfunctional. The other brother, though, grew up in a very different way. He grew up to be very successful. He never touched drugs and alcohol. He grew up to have a family, a loving relationship, great kids. He was a pillar of the community. He had a ton of friends, very generous. And his life was one of those lives that you wanted to look at and that you wanted to emulate. He was really a leader in his community. And somebody asked him, they asked him both this question separately. They said, how did you end up the way that you ended up? You know, how did your life turn out the way it turned out? And they both gave the exact same answer. They both said, I turned out the way I turned out because I watched my dad. See, the one brother watched his dad, and he emulated his dad. He followed his dad's footsteps. The other brother looked at his dad, and he did the opposite of what his dad did. He learned from his dad's example. Now, both these brothers, the same DNA, the same genetics, the same, grew up in the same house, had the same experiences, and yet both of them saw them very differently, and the way that they saw them had incredible outcomes in their life. It changed them dramatically, even though it was exactly the same, and their lives could not be further apart. You know, the way that you see things really matters, if you're seeing it rightly or not. So often people just say, well, that's just how I was raised. It's how I've always been. I've always struggled with that. Nobody likes me. My teachers hate me. Everybody's against me. And they have all these kinds of excuses. In fact, it's one of the most pernicious things going on right now in our culture is that our culture is letting people get away with it. They're letting people get away with being victims, victims of their circumstances, victims of the neighborhood they grew up in, victims of their family circumstances, victims of their socioeconomic situation. It's a weird time to clap. Victims of their gender, victims of the way that people treat you. And they just have that as an excuse, and they live their life like a victim. And I want to tell you, you don't have to see it that way. There's a different way to see it. And we have close to 2,000 people here at this conference, okay? And most of you guys, I do not know. Even the ones that I do know you, I don't know you that good, okay? A very small number of you I know pretty well, okay? But I'm going to say something that is true for every single person in here. And I have no idea. You know, some of you right now, you're in here feeling like, dude, life cannot get any better. Life just keeps going great for me. Hey, man, do me a favor. Bro, go sit somewhere else, please. Okay? Thank you. Just walk of shame all the way up that aisle and find an adult and say, tell me what to do. Okay? And they're going to help you. Okay. Shh. Listen. This is going to be true for you whether your life is going great right now or whether you really feel like, dude, I don't think it could get any worse. Dude, it just keeps piling up all over me. It has been such a terrible, what's that? No good, terrible, very bad day, whatever, something like that, okay? It's just been like one of those times for you. Look, there's people in here, there's tall people in here, and there are short people in here. There are smart people in here. There are less than smart people in here. There are white people and black people and Hispanic people and Laotians and like, where are my Laotians at? Anybody from Laos? Hey, yo, respect. Are you guys actually Laotian? Yeah? Oh, sweet, dude. Okay, all right, sweet. Well, I'm glad you're here. And it's true for everybody. The most important thing that you need to know is what does God see? What does my life look like from God's perspective? That's a preeminent question for every single person in here, no matter what's going on in your life. No matter you just asked out the girl of your dreams, or better yet, the girl of your dreams just asked you out, and you that said, I gotta think about it, okay? And you're feeling real good about yourself. Or you just asked out the guy of your dreams and he just told you, I gotta think about it, and things are really bad. This is true for you. This is true. You need to know, God, How do you see my life? What is your perspective on my life? We have to, this whole thing is about us trying to get God's view. What is, from God's perspective, what is the vision of our lives? What does God see? Ephesians 1:18 says this, I pray, and I think Carl even used this verse when he was preaching, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope which he has called you to, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people. The Apostle Paul is writing to the church at Ephesus, and just to be clear, I'm going to get into a lot of scripture tonight, okay? So I hope you're cool with that. You got track with me. We believe that this is God's life-giving word to us, okay? And so we're going to hold it up tonight. We're going to dive into it. But he says, I pray that the eyes of your heart would be enlightened, okay? That the eyes of your spiritual eyes would be able to see things in the light accurately, truly, as they really are. That you wouldn't see things through a skewed lens or a false perspective. You wouldn't just see things with your natural eyes, but you would see your life and your circumstances and this world through God-given eyes, enlightened. Helen Keller, who famously said, was asked, is there anything worse than being blind? And she says, the only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision. You know, there's a lot of people who have eyes in their head, and yet they can't see what's going on right in front of them. They don't have spiritual eyes to really understand the reality, the truth of what's going on in their lives. Jesus talked about this. In fact, he talked to his disciples about this. They were sailing across, and he said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And they're like, leaven, bread. Oh, he's mad we didn't bring bread. Okay? And it says in Mark 8, 17-18, aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, why are you talking about having no bread? That's not what I'm talking about. Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? He's saying you can have eyes in your head and not be able to see the truth that's 6 inches in front of you. God wants to enlighten the eyes of our heart to help us to understand. You know, so often we use our five senses to get around in the world, right? Sight, smell, taste, hearing, touch, right? And that's how most people perceive the world. We perceive the world through these senses that God's given us. But I want to tell you, God has given you another sense. God has given you a sense that does not fall under the category of sight, smell, taste, hearing, or touching. It's faith. It's trusting God with your life. Believing on him and believing the things that he said to you. Like this comes up all the time in the Bible, but there's this one great story that really is kind of a perfect metaphor for what the life of God is like. And it's a story where Jesus walks on the water. It's in Matthew 14:22, it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get in the boat, go on ahead of him to the other side of the Sea of Galilee while he dismissed the crowd. After he dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray, and later that night he was alone. And the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by waves because the wind was against it. That's not a problem for Jesus. So Jesus says, shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. It's awesome. You know, so many of Jesus' miracles have like a purpose, you know? But this one's just like, I just got to get to the boat. So I'll just walk. And so he comes walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said. They cried out in fear, but Jesus immediately said to them, boys, take courage. It's me, Jesus. Don't be afraid. Peter replies, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. Jesus says, come. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw, say saw. When he saw the wind, it's weird. You guys really took Saw out for a while. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink. He cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And those who were in the boat worshiping him were saying, truly, you are the Son of God. And right here in this story, in this interaction, particularly between Jesus and Peter, we have so much about what the life of faith is like. Because Jesus has called us not only to life, but the Bible says life abundant. He's called you to do supernatural things. In fact, Jesus said, my followers are going to do greater things than I myself did. He's called us to a supernatural life. A life where we walk with God, where we listen to his voice, we pray, he speaks to us and gives us direction. In fact, we walk in a life, the Christian life is a life lived in confidence that God is going to lead you to where he wants you to go and take care of you. And so Peter sees him, they're all freaked out, but then they realize it's Jesus walking on the water. It's in the middle of the night. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. And Peter sees it, and Peter, more than anybody, he says, I want to do that. I want to do the kinds of things that Jesus does. That's awesome. I want to live that kind of life. And so he says, Lord, can I do it? Jesus says, yeah, you can. So Peter gets out of the boat. Now, just imagine that, where you're holding on, and you put your first foot down, and you step on the water, and it's fine, no problem. It's like, no way. I can't believe this is working. This is awesome. He takes another step. He lets go of the boat. He is now walking on the water. And if you're Peter, you have like one nanosecond of like, awesome. This is what I was meant to do. This is awesome. And then what it says that then he saw what was happening. He saw the waves. He saw the wind blowing. He saw how crazy this was. And he began to sink. Because what he saw, all the circumstances, everything that was wrong, but you know what he didn't see? He didn't see Jesus. He took his eyes off of Jesus. And when you take your eyes off of Jesus, this is what's so difficult about the Christian walk. When you take your eyes off Jesus, everything falls apart. You just start to sink. It's not meant to be lived without him. You know, when John was preaching today, he was preaching about his first experience at Future Quest and how he left here feeling like, dude, I'm never going back. I'm changed. I'm a changed person. And I was listening to him, and I just thought, like, man, I had an experience similar, but mine was totally different than that. I grew up going to church, but I wasn't a Christian. How many of you guys, at some point, you went to church, but you weren't a Christian either? Okay. I went to church because my parents brought me, and it's where I had a lot of friends there. I knew everybody. I was best friends with the pastor's son, and I went to youth group. I was even a leader in the youth group, but I wasn't a Christian. I didn't know anything about having a relationship with Jesus, but that church, they took us to camp, and we went to Forest Home, okay? And I was in seventh grade, I remember. I was in seventh grade. We went to camp. I don't remember almost any. There's this girl there that I liked. My friend, we like the same girl. And he said, dude, will you ask her out for me? And I was like, no problem, dude. I will. We've been friends for a long time. I'm a good friend. I'll do that for you. And I went to her and I was like, hey, my friend Jason, he likes you. But he's not that cool of a dude. And really, but if you were interested, I too like you. And she's like, I'll go out with you. And I went back to our cabin. I said, Jason, I've got some good news and I got some bad news. Which do you want first? He said, just tell me, what'd she say? She said, no. And I said, I don't know how it happened, but somehow she and I are going out now. And so then, obviously, in true camp fashion, I didn't talk to her again. And then the next night, her friend came to me and said, hey, she doesn't want to go out with you anymore, but she's interested in your friend Jason. And then they went out. So, you know, all your sneaky behind the back stuff, it, you know, it's going to come back to haunt you. But listen, that's not the point of the story. I wasn't going to say that. What I was going to say was that camp was the first time in my life that I remember really feeling the presence of God. And what it was the last night. I remember there was a guy speaking. I have no idea what he said. I have no idea what he was preaching on. But I know at the end of it, snot and tears were coming out of me because I could feel the love of God. I could feel the presence of God in a way that left me zero doubt that God was real and zero doubt that God loved me. And I remember just that feeling of like, it was like a mixture of like conviction of sin and recognition of God's holiness and also like just the power of the love of God and the goodness of God. But I also remember this one thing. I knew that if I was going to follow God, it meant everything. Amen. It required me to give up everything to follow him. That was never a question for me. I knew that I couldn't halfway really follow him. I knew whatever my options were, that wasn't one of them. It was either yes or no, in or out. None of this one foot in, one foot out stuff. And the problem was I knew that I didn't have what it took to follow him. I knew I was too afraid of what people thought of me. I wasn't ready to give up any of that stuff. I wasn't ready to risk that. I already felt, you know, middle school, insecure, whatever. I was scared. And in that one moment where I got a glimpse of Jesus, I got a glimpse of who he really is, of what his love is really like, I began to look at the waves around me. I began to look at the unsettled ground. I began to think, I can't do this. This is not possible. I took my eyes off of Jesus in that moment. I just looked at my own self, my own life, and I thought, I don't have what it takes. I can't do it. And so I didn't. It wasn't until later when I was about 19 years old that I finally made a choice I was going to follow Jesus. And really, at that point, my life has never been the same since. And it really was, I had to see the example of other people that loved him that did it for me to believe that maybe I could do it too. I had to take my eyes off of just whatever I had to give up and look at what the prize was. Look at who he really was. It says in Hebrews 12:2, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. You know what it means to fix your eyes on Jesus? To look to him with supernatural, spiritual eyes, to set your gaze on him. Say, God, I'm just looking at you. I'm just making eye contact with you. I'm gonna skip some stuff here. You know, the Bible's full of stories of God opening people's eyes to see what is really true, to see the reality. You know, there's actually four times in the Bible where it says that God actually supernaturally opened somebody's eyes. There's the story, I'm not gonna get into this, I was gonna go into this a lot deeper, but we don't have time. But the remember Abraham? Remember God promised Abraham a son, and then Abraham was like, I'm gonna help God out. And because Sarah was too old to have a baby. And so Sarah said, well, why don't you sleep with my servant, Hagar? And he did, and she got pregnant with a son named Ishmael. And then God says, that's not what I was talking about. And then Sarah gets pregnant supernaturally with Isaac. But Sarah becomes so jealous of Ishmael that she finally convinces Abraham, you gotta get rid of him. And so Abraham does it. He gives Hagar and Ishmael a little bit of food and a bottle of water and says, kick rocks. And they go out in the desert and basically they start wandering around. As soon as the water's dried up and the food is gone, Hagar realizes we're gonna die out here and I don't have what it takes to watch my baby boy die. So it says she goes and sets him down on the ground, and she walks about 100 yards away, and she just weeps. And it says that the Lord came to her and he said, Hagar, why are you weeping? I'm going to take care of you. It says he opens her eyes and he shows her a well. You know, when we think about opening our eyes, our spiritual eyes, sometimes we think, oh, it's like for salvation or just giving your life to Jesus. That's not it. God constantly wants to be showing you things, constantly wants to be walking by faith in all these areas of your life. And so he opens Hagar's eyes to see God's provision, that he's taking care of it. What you were so despondent, depressed, down about, God had already taken care of. He has resources that you don't know about. He's able to provide for you. The second story in the Bible is the story of Balaam's donkey. If you notice, Balaam was a prophet of God, but he wasn't a very good one. And he had a weakness. He loved money. He wanted to get rich. And the king of Moab said, I will pay you if you will prophesy against Israel and help us to defeat them. And so he says, all right, I'll come meet with you. And he gets on his donkey and he goes down to meet the king of Moab. The problem is, in the middle of the walkway is an angel with a sword drawn, ready to kill Balaam. But Balaam doesn't see it. The donkey does, though. The donkey's like, nope. Goes into a field. Balaam gets off, beats the donkey. They keep going down. They get to an area where there's a narrowed road. And again, the angel's there with his sword drawn, ready to kill Balaam. Balaam doesn't see it. The donkey does. And the donkey begins to push itself against the wall, hurting Balaam's foot. Balaam gets down, beats his donkey, gets back on, convinces the donkey to keep going. The donkey finally goes. The guy, they get to a place where the walls are like this. There's no turning around. And the angel is there. The donkey sees it. Balaam doesn't. The donkey just lays down. It's like, beat me to death. I'm not allowing this angel to kill us. Balaam gets off and begins to beat the donkey mercilessly, okay? The donkey says, it says that God opened the mouth of the donkey, and the donkey says, why are you beating me? I swear to you guys, this is what it says. He says, then, even dumber, Balaam talks back to the donkey, and he says, I hate your guts. If I had a sword, I would kill you right now. All I have is this stupid baton, and so I just have to settle for beating you. That's basically what he says. Then the donkey says, I've always been a good donkey to you. You should stop beating me. And there's an angel who's trying to kill us. It says that God opens Balaam's eyes and he sees the angel and he becomes terrified. And the angel says, I'm gonna kill you. And he goes, I've made a terrible mistake. I'd like to apologize to the Lord, okay? And so he backs up. God spares Balaam. He ends up using him. Look, sometimes what you need God to open your eyes to is that you're on the wrong path. The path that you are headed down is going to end in your own destruction. I just want to say, some of you, the reason you're here at Future Quest is because God is speaking this to you. You are on a path in your life and you are stubbornly persisting. You continue down that path and God is saying to you, if you continue down, I'm going to destroy you. Your life choices are going to kill you. And God is saying, he's opening your eyes to that path and he's giving you a grace, an opportunity to turn around, to repent, to come to him. I just want to say, please listen to him. John talked about when Elisha and his servant were surrounded by the Arameans and God opens the servant's eyes to see that it's not what he thought it was. His circumstances are different than he thought they were. He could see the problem, but he had no idea about the solution. Some of you guys right now, you feel real woe is me. You've just accepted this is terrible. It's not going good. And God's saying, no, I have a solution to this. Turn to me. And he's trying to open your eyes to show you what he really has for you, that it's different than you think it is. The way things are going is not the way that you think they are, and he has help for you. The final one is the disciples on the road to Emmaus. You remember, this is the same day, the Sunday that Jesus rose from the dead. these two disciples are walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus. It's about a 7-mile trip. And Jesus comes alongside and joins them. It says their eyes were shrouded. They didn't recognize Jesus. But one of the reasons they didn't recognize him is because they thought Jesus was dead in a tomb. So they knew whoever this dude was not Jesus. And as they walked along, he said, "Why are you so sad?" And they said, "Well, haven't you heard? Don't you know anything? Jesus, a great man of God, has been killed and crucified. It's terrible." And Jesus begins to reveal the scriptures to him about how the entire Old Testament points that this is God's plan. This is his plan for redemption. This is his plan for salvation. And it says that they got down, they came to dinner. It says that Jesus took the bread and he broke it, and their eyes were open. They could see him, and he disappeared. You know what? God is trying to show some of you who he really is. Who he really is, that he is not your homeboy. He is not your boyfriend. He is not your co-pilot. He is not some dude who's just like a co-equal that you guys are doing life together. No, he is the living God, the Alpha, the Omega, the first and the last. He is the risen Savior, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And he's revealing to you the grandness of who he is, the majesty of who he is, the power of who he is. And some of you, he's trying to open your eyes so that you can bow to the ground and say, "God, come and have your way in my life. I surrender, I yield to you." A couple of years ago, there was this story that came in the news about an American missionary who was killed in the Indian Ocean in the Bay of Bengal on an island called North Sentinel Island. And when it first came out, I don't know if you ever been, if you're on Twitter or not, but like Twitter is like a cesspool. Don't go there if you're not on there. But all these stories came up and like just about how this guy, how stupid this guy was, how foolish he was, like how it was good that he got killed. He deserved to die. He's trying to bring, you know, white hegemony and Christian superiority to like this unreached people group and all this kind of stuff. And it was just like really terrible stuff. And so it really just, the story interested me. And I've always been interested in missionaries and martyrs and people who give their life. And so I began to look into it. And what was crazy to me is that there's this island and it's one of the Andaman Islands. I think there's actually a picture of it. Go ahead and put that, the picture of the island up there, like where it's at in the world. You can see that. Okay, so it's in the middle of nowhere. And there's this chain of like hundreds of islands. And one of them, about 5 miles by 3 miles, has one of the last remaining groups of untouched people. Okay? They actually have had almost no interaction with the outside world. And in fact, every time that anybody, yeah, that's them. Every time anybody tries to contact them, they like are super warlike. Like I guess some fishermen fell asleep and their boat washed up on the shore. They killed them. They've been super aggressive to anybody who tries to approach the island. After the tsunami in 2005, they did a flyover with a helicopter and they're like trying to shoot arrows at it. And in fact, what's crazy is they have a language that is not related to any other language in the world. These people are completely untouched, and so it's illegal to go there. You can't go within 5 miles of nautical miles of this island. Go ahead and put a picture of John Chow out there. This guy heard about it. He was a missionary, and he thought, these people need to hear about Jesus. There's these people who for a couple thousand years have been living and dying on this island, and no one has gone there to be able to share the gospel. And began to feel like God was calling him to. And so this was just fascinating to me. It was really interesting. So I started to study it. And I found out that this wasn't just some reckless idea this guy had. In fact, he had made a decision 10 years before. He was 26 years old when he was killed. But when he was 16 years old, he found out about this group of people. And he began to pray and seek God and feel like God was calling him to go try to reach these people. And in fact, he spent a lot of his life, he studied linguistics at an institute called SIL, and it's one of the foremost linguistical studies about how to communicate with people where you don't know their language because nobody knows this language. He graduated from Oral Roberts with a sports medicine degree and was an EMT and been studying emergency medicine. He was a sponsored missionary through a respected missions group named All Nations. He previously traveled to the surrounding Andaman Islands 3 times in 2015 and 2016 to learn and prepare for this trip. Before going to the island, he got 13 different immunizations and quarantined himself for 2 weeks to try to reduce the possibility of passing on any viruses to them. He never dated. He never got married because he knew what he was doing was dangerous. And that if he was successful, he was prepared to spend the next 15, 20, 30 years of his life living with his people, earning their trust so that he might be able to share the gospel with them. And as I began to read about this man's life, it began to become clear to me that this guy saw things very different than everybody else saw them. You know, if you're going to follow God, you got to be willing to see things different than other people see them. You're going to see things they're not going to see. They're going to tell you you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. You're wrong. And the reason is they can't see it. The last thing he wrote was a letter to his brother and sister and his parents. I just want to read it to you. He says, "Brian and Mary and Mom and Dad, you guys might think I'm crazy in all this, but I think it's worth it to declare Jesus to these people. Please do not be angry at them or at God if I get killed. Rather, please live your lives in obedience to whatever he has called you to, and I'll see you again when we pass through the veil. This is not a pointless thing. The eternal lives of this tribe is at hand, and I can't wait to see them around the throne of God, worshiping in their own language, as Revelation 7, 9, and 10 states. I love you all, and I pray none of you love anything in this world more than Jesus Christ. Soli Deo Gloria, glory to God, John." Now, Revelation 7, 9, and 10 says this. The band can come out. "After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count from every nation, tribe, and people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice, 'Salvation belongs to our God, who sits on the throne and to the Lamb.'" See what it says there? The Apostle John has a vision. He's taken up into heaven, and what does he see? He sees this huge multitude that no one can count. And look what it says. It says, "A great multitude from every nation, tribe, people, and language." Here's what he saw. Here's what John saw. He read that and he thought, what about the North Sentinelese people? If it's every tribe, nation, and tongue, what about them? Because they have no Bible. No one's ever come and shared about Jesus with them. They don't have the gospel. Who's going to do that? And he began to feel God's call on his life. God, you're calling me to this. I'm going to do it. I'm willing to risk everything because I see Jesus. Now listen, I'm not trying to get everybody in here. I'm not trying to tell you need to go try to find some unreached people group that are dangerous people. They ended up shooting with an arrow and he died the first day he was on the island. But I'll tell you this, his story's not over. 2 years ago, I had no idea who the North Sentinelese people were. Most of you before today, you had no idea either. God is going to use this to bring about his purposes. So I'm not telling you that you need to go. I'm also not telling you you need to go. Okay? But I'm telling you this, that God is calling you to something that require you to see with eyes of faith. I just want to close with this verse from Hebrews 11. In Hebrews 11 is that whole Hall of Faith chapter where it talks about all the heroes of the faith, but there's this one really interesting part that it says about Moses. It says, "By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter." Most of us, almost all of us, know the story of Moses. His mom put him in the basket. Pharaoh's daughter found him. He was raised in Pharaoh's house. He had everything he could have wanted as an Egyptian. He had power, he had money, he had prestige. It was all at his fingertips. But he refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Instead, he chose to be mistreated along with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than all the treasures of Egypt. Now here's what's crazy. Jesus hadn't come Jesus hadn't been born yet. This is 1,500 years before Jesus was born. But it says that he regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ to be of greater value than all the treasures of Egypt. Why? It tells us in the next two verses. It says, because he was looking ahead to his reward. He knew there was more than just this. And it says, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing Pharaoh's anger. Look at this. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. Because Moses had the eyes of his heart enlightened. And even 1,500 years before Jesus was even born, he looked forward. He could see Jesus. He could see the Messiah. He could see the promises of God. And he said, I'm fixing my eyes on that. And it's more valuable than all the treasure of Egypt. It's more valuable than anything in this world. In fact, that is more precious to me than any other thing. And I'm willing to lay it all down for that eternal reward that God has for me. I just got to tell you, Moses is not special. Because God asks the same thing of you. No one can come to me who does not first hate his mother and father, his brother and sister, and yes, even his own life. You cannot be my disciple. You know what the lowest possible option for a Christian is? Just a disciple. A disciple just means a follower of Jesus. And he says, if you want to be my disciple, you have to give up everything. You have to be willing to set aside everything for me. To follow me. Sometimes it looks so hard as we're looking around at the waves and everything going on around us and all the things that life has and all of our friends and all what other people think about us and whatever circumstances we have and our future and our past and all this kind of, and as long as we're looking at that stuff, it feels overwhelming. It feels like I can't do it. It feels like I don't have what it takes. I'm insignificant. There's nothing special about me. I'm not good. Maybe there's some kids in here that Christianity comes easy to, but that's not me. I can't give up everything. And as long as you're looking at the waves, that's what it's always going to look like. But when you fix your eyes on Jesus, you realize there is nothing better. There is no treasure of greater value. There is no mountain that I wouldn't climb, desert that I wouldn't cross. There is nothing strong enough to hold me back. Because that's all I want. That's the only thing I want, is I want him. Bow your heads. Father. Lord, you're of such surpassing greatness, God. Lord, so much, God, that we don't, it's hard for us to even know, to even comprehend the height and the depth and the width and the breadth of your kindness, of your grace, of your love, of your majesty. Jesus, would you give us a revelation, Lord, that you are worth it, God. Would you open the eyes of our hearts, God, to see the true treasure that you are?